What I'm going to be talking about today is what we're going to do going forward. You see, we've managed to achieve the recognition that comes with gaining our silver award. Here it is. There's the papers that came through the post. And I was really delighted to get that and super thankful to the team. Lots of people put their own little bit into that. And it's been great. So we could get to the point where we had a silver award. We talked a little bit about whether we should go on to gold, but we then thought, well, actually, you know, maybe there are other things we can do. But it's the first tiny step, and it's really good. It's really good we've managed to do that. But today, I really wanted to stop and to sort of check. Here's my little list. So check climate, hope. Hope is a really vital part of what we need to think about. The ecosystem, the catastrophe that is forecast, and knowledge. I think knowledge is a great key to a lot of these things. And then back at the bottom, it doesn't fit with check, but it's hope. We must always end there. You see, the thing is that the environmental pressure groups have really failed in many ways because they've not really recognised the simple fact that we in the church, I think we do understand, that we live in a fallen world. We live in a world where actually you can't just produce a whole lot of facts and people will just take that seriously and just change their lifestyles because of it. But we understand that. We understand the nature of mankind so much better as the Christian church, I think. There's no doubt that global temperatures are now going to rise above 2.5 degrees above the baseline, and it's now unstoppable. 2 billion people will have to move away from the low-lying coastal areas of the world, the places which are really even closer to the sea than we are. And many of them will then lose their lives in the conflict that will follow that. And actually, some people are saying that could happen in a relatively short term. It all depends on the ice caps and what's happened with them. You see, the Western world loves to imagine that we're like a bunch of computers. You know, you input information into us, and we make the right outgoing decisions. Ta-da! Yeah, and logical behaviour comes out. And actually, that's not how we are. We are completely different from that. And as Christians, we know what God thinks of us. He says that actually we're wonderfully, fearfully and wonderfully made. It's a completely different way that we are. We're not a bunch of computers. We can't just feed logical information into our lives and think that that's going to solve the problem. So in a way, the environmental movement, they've done a great job, but it hasn't produced the change that needs to happen. That's the trouble. And that's what's so sad. And in a way, world politics has failed even more. It's just been so poorly handled. Okay, all the easy things have maybe been accomplished, but not the things that really need to happen. Because since 1979, there's been real clarity in the scientific community, the majority of it, that we were on a road to self-destruction. But we've just continued to destroy the world. And actually, for the last 30 years, we really know with much greater certainty that this path was the one we were on. We've had COP26, or we've had 26 COPs. We're going to have another one shortly. But actually, sometimes it just seems like it's just an argument about whose fault it is, rather than creating really good solutions. There's always a little bit of a headline-grabbing solution, but actually it never takes us far enough. And this year, there was the wonderful, I'm giving all the letters there, technical consultation on the COP26 health program commitments made by countries in the World Health Organization. But that really was just an argument that got very little place. It just was whose fault it was, and nothing much came out of it. It was held in May in the Netherlands. Now, there's absolutely no point, therefore, me going through all the catastrophic issues that everybody's heard of lots that are going before the world. And because actually it turns out that it doesn't make a huge amount of difference. Indeed, it actually just makes us feel worse. You know, we just feel, well, what can we do? You know? And in a way, that's the worst possible scenario, isn't it? If we just kind of give up and say, well, there's nothing that little me can actually do to make this right. But despair and hopelessness is not God's way. So I come on to this very important topic of hope. Our God is a God of hope. A lovely verse in Romans, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to be trusting in God as well as seeing the reality of the difficulties that are out there. We need to remain hopeful because actually it turns out that the people who in a way are maybe going to be able to have the highest level of impact in turning this all around is the communities of faith. I've been involved with Faith for Change, which is a lovely group of churches plus the Birkenhead Mosque, and actually a group of people who are really focused on how we within the faith communities can produce change in our world. It's a tiny start, but it's a whole lot of people with a lot of passion who want to do this. And I think as a church, we're often poor at recognizing that we're in a different position to many others in our world because we do actually have a different perspective. Okay, our Christian perspective tends to be a bit influenced by the society in which we live. And in a way, that's fair enough. But we still do have a different perspective, because we've got an eternal perspective, because we believe in an eternal God. We've got a perspective that tells us that God doesn't just sit on his hands. He is the God of love. Now, we may be a bit selfish. We may be, well, definitely imperfect. Well, spiritually speaking, myself. But we are the body of Christ, and we're linked to every other believer in this world. Just loads of people all around the world. Billions of them. Billions of them. Billions of us. We're linked. And of course, we're also linked locally. From our little church here, we link out in the community, yeah, because we all have friends. And beyond, into the wider community, we have links with the other churches. There are special relationships that we actually have. So, when we start to work together in cooperation with the empowering of the God's Holy Spirit, we're much more likely to be the answer to the climate catastrophe problem than maybe most other people are, because we live with hope. We live in the belief that God is also involved. This is the hope that God loves the world and that he gave his only Son. That is fundamental to the way that we live our lives. And of course, We have the lovely rainbow promise as well. Something that is really good for us to hang on to. Not that God will intervene without us being with him, but he wants to partner with us in that intervention. We are called into the rainbow promise, where God says, I'll never flood the whole world again. We're called to be part of solving the catastrophe. He's calling upon us, his worldwide church, to rise and help to put things right. We can't do it alone. It can only be done in partnership with the living God, as he looks upon our world with mercy and using his natural world and his people to change the terrible disaster that's going to befall billions of people. That's why we need to have so much more hope. We're not doing this by ourselves. We must put our hope in him and in each other. The community of faith has a hugely significant role to play in finding a way out of this awful mess. We live in a complicated ecosystem. I don't know about you, have you been watching the latest Frozen Planet 2 series? I love it. It's just such beautiful pictures. And then at the end, you go and see how the photographers actually took some of these amazing videos with their clever drones that they fly out to a collapsing glacier. I don't know how it didn't get swallowed by the collapsing glacier, but it's absolutely fantastic stuff. It's also scary, because the glaciers should not be collapsing at the rate they are. At every turn, we learn that the ecosystem is failing, and that the wonderful images that we are viewing may not be available in real life to my grandchildren as they grow up. They may well have gone. Because we have a catastrophe building up. This world is a single ecosystem, and we ignore that at our peril. You know, there's some perfectly reasonable predictions that climate change is going to actually make large swathes of Europe into a desert. But I don't particularly want to dwell on that. You know, we all know there's no good scenarios in relation to this. And humankind, well, certainly the scientific community have known about that for 50 years. We've known about it for 30. The trouble is that the whole principle on which the Western world is based means that it's nigh on impossible to turn this round. Except if billions of people start playing their part. You see, I think it's an illusion that economic growth can continue unchecked forever. I think it's wrong. How could it possibly work like that? It doesn't work in a personal sense, does it? Economic growth tends to, you know, level off as we get older. That's okay. You know, we live in a mature, developed society. Why should we have economic growth forever? It doesn't make any sense. And because of that desire to always grow the economy instead of being satisfied with where we are, the result is that we can never stop climate change. And that will be deadly. I was thinking about this and thinking, oh my goodness, we're building a very beautiful, or some people might say not, seawall down on the front of West Kirby. And actually, in 25 years' time, if things continue as they are, there won't be much use. The sea will be outside the front door of our church at the high tide. you know, we're going to need our waiters on to get in here. Come by boat, maybe, high tide. So, what do we need to do? Well, we need knowledge. Actually, we've got lots of knowledge. You look around you in this church, there's lots of very knowledgeable people. It's absolutely brilliant. We need to start with knowledge, though. And what the Echo Church team are proposing is the next thing we do is that together, as a big family, church family project, is that we all measure our carbon footprint so that every single one of us knows our carbon footprint. That knowledge will really help us, because we would say, well, you could reduce that bit of your carbon footprint, I can reduce this bit. We probably can all do different bits, we'll probably make reductions in different amounts, but when we add it into the whole congregation, because if you include all the children, and they have carbon footprints as well, if you include everybody that comes along here, actually it's probably about 150 people in the end. Well, that is a lot of people. At the moment, the Eco Church team isn't quite sure which carbon footprint mechanism to use. There's quite a few online. A few of us have tried these two. They are good because they're easy to fill in. They're maybe not quite good enough because there's a little bit too much approximation. So we're doing a bit of research, so I can't tell you what we're going to use. But that's what we'd like to do. Now, on average, the UK person has a carbon footprint of about 10 tons of carbon dioxide a year. Actually, that's not changed much over the last 30 years. It's pretty well held at level. But actually, I would not be at all surprised to find that within this community, our carbon footprint is generally lower than that. I bet it is, because I think, I suspect that many of us live slightly simpler lives than the average. So let's say each person here is 9 tons. In actual fact, the world average carbon footprint across everybody is 4.5 tons of carbon dioxide a year. And it'd be great to try and aim to get ourselves down to the average. So, like, we're not contributing any more to this problem than the average person in the world, you know, from China to Africa to Europe to America. Now, not many of us are going to be able to do that quickly. I'm absolutely sure of that. And that's not the aim. The aim is not to necessarily do it quickly. It's to be heading in the right direction. You know, I don't know, this is said so often, it's a real cliche, but you know, if you don't aim at the target, you're never going to actually get there at all. So if we have a target, we're doing that and make our way towards it. What we want to do is to recognise each family, each household, each person's carbon footprint, and then advise and encourage each other. You know, there'll be different ways of doing this, loads of different ways. And if we're all trying to do things, that'd be great. It'd be easier for some than for others, and actually that's okay, because this could be a whole church community activity. And at the end of the first 18 months, we might be able to say, as a church, we have saved 150 tons of carbon dioxide. That would be pretty good. But I don't want it to stop there. Because I see this as an outreach and sort of evangelism type opportunity as well. You see, you know, here we are, back in West Kerry again. But we can have influence. There's lots of people that would want to join in. There's the other churches. There's the Face for Change group who are very interested in joining this already. There's the Transition Town people. There's a load of people we can bring into our carbon reduction team, as it were. And that's what the Eco Church team would like to be doing. We'd like to spread it wider. And so on and so on. The knowledge of where our lifestyles are adding to the climate change problem will give us the best chance of doing something useful. Some may say, well, it's never going to be enough, and of course, there's truth in that. But actually, if lots of people, churches and others are all joining in, if this same idea is starting off all over the country, all over the world. If there's, I listened to this lovely talk by a Catholic theologian, who I have to say I pinch many of her ideas. She is saying, like, there's 2 billion Catholics in the world. We could all be part of this. You know, there's so much that we could actually do, powered by the worldwide communities of faith. Jesus says, truly I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. So it's not just doing, it's prayer too. Our action needs to be accompanied by prayer, just as Jesus commanded. God has shown throughout the Bible that he honours action and prayer together. So we, the church, in every corner of the spinning globe, need to act and pray. Is it on your prayer list? I am convinced that we will see the miracle of this terrible catastrophe reduced if we act and pray, and the terrible suffering at least in part averted, and a world worth living in for our children, our grandchildren, if we involve the Almighty Creator God in our actions. And then actually, what's actually happening is the reverse. God is calling us to be involved in his plan to save the world. He always is. Just going to ask Kath if you can come back and shed her lovely warm blanket. She's just going to play quietly in a minute when I get to praying. So we come to the verse that Jenny read to us, the verses. What good is it, my sisters and brothers, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a sister or brother is without clothes and daily food. If what he says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but doesn't do anything about their physical needs, what good is that? In the same way, faith by itself, if it's not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say to me, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. This is one of our deeds. So let's just do it.